Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On March 29, 2021, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. versus Arkansas Teacher Retirement System. The questions before the court were whether a defendant in a securities class action may rebut the presumption of class-wide reliance recognized in Basic, Inc. versus Levinson by pointing to the generic nature of the alleged misstatements and showing that the statements had no impact on the price of the security, even though that evidence is also relevant to the substantive element of materiality. And second, whether a defendant seeking to rebut the basic presumption has only a burden of production or also the ultimate burden of persuasion. Ted Frank, director for the Center for Class Action Fairness and the Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute, joins us today to discuss this case's oral argument.
Today we're discussing Goldman Sachs Group versus Arkansas Teacher Retirement System, which was argued Monday in the Supreme Court and has a disclosure. My organization is adverse to Arkansas Teacher in two pending cases in the First and Seventh Circuits. Those are interesting cases. You should come to our website at hlli.org and look at those. But this particular case is another in a series of cases defining the viability and limits of the fraud on the market doctrine in securities litigation. To recap, courts have inferred a private right of action for securities fraud from Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. The elements of such a claim are a material misstatement or omission, scienter, a connection with the purchase or sale of a security, economic loss, loss causation, i.e. that the misrepresentation caused the asserted loss, and the element at issue in this line of cases here, reliance. To obtain class certification in litigation, one must prove that common issues predominate. Now, normally, reliance would seem to be difficult to prove on a class-wide basis. Isn't it an individualized consideration? Everybody is purchasing stock for their own individualized reasons. It would seem to be impossible to prove reliance on a class-wide basis. But in Basic versus Levinson, the Supreme Court used economic theory to endorse what's called the fraud on the market theory of reliance. In an efficient market, a stock's price reflects all public information about the stock. Therefore, a defendant's public misrepresentations would presumptively affect the market price of a stock, and thus everybody who's purchased the stock at the resultantly inflated price before a corrective statement has issued has, quote unquote, relied on the misrepresentations. Under Supreme Court law, a defendant can rebut the presumption. As Basic said, any showing that severs the link between the alleged misrepresentation and either the price received or paid by a plaintiff or his decision to trade at a fair market price. If a defendant shows that the misrepresentation, in fact, did not lead to a distortion in price, it would break the causal connection by eliminating the basis for finding that the fraud had been transmitted through the market price. In recent years, the court has interpreted Basic in the Halliburton-Amgen trilogy of cases, and you see two names there, but it's called a trilogy. That's because there are two Halliburtons out of these three cases. In Halliburton 1 and Amgen, the court held that someone seeking to demonstrate fraud on the market for purposes of class certification need not prove substantive elements of the loss, causation, or materiality. But in Halliburton 2, the court held that a court must consider evidence a defendant offers to show that an alleged misrepresentation did not affect the price of the relevant security, even if that same evidence would be highly relevant at the merit stage. The court reasoned that a defendant is entitled to rebut the basic presumption through any evidence showing that the asserted misrepresentation or its correction did not affect the market price of the defendant's stock. The court observed that BASIC's requirements are an indirect proxy for price impact, and an indirect proxy should not preclude direct evidence that the market price was not, in fact, affected. In permitting a defendant to rebut the BASIC presumption through evidence of the absence of price impact, Halliburton, too, emphasized that price impact differs from materiality. Materiality is a substantive element of the securities claim. The fact that a misrepresentation was reflected in the market price at the time of the transaction has everything to do with the issue of predominance at the class certification stage. The court thus prohibited a court from artificially limiting the evidence at class certification and expressly permitted a defendant to, quote, seek to defeat the BASIC presumption at that stage through direct as well as indirect price impact evidence. And if you're confused at this point, well, so are the lower courts. There's a very good 2020 Seventh Circuit decision by Judge Hamilton on this called Allstate. I think that will be likely influential on the court, where it complains that these decisions require courts to split very fine hairs, as he notes. The challenge lies in the fact that both reliance and loss causation overlap the materiality of the alleged misrepresentations. At the heart of this confusing area of the case law is the fact that all three concepts addressed, loss causation, materiality, price impact, are in essence slightly different takes on the same fundamental question: did a statement matter? As a result, evidence relevant to each issue is likely also to be relevant to the others. And reversing the district court, they noted taking a piece of evidence and placing it in any of the three boxes to the exclusion of the others would be an artificial and logically questionable exercise. So that sets up this case. Goldman Sachs, like every company, has generic statements of ethical aspirations that you would find on successories, posters, and corporate statements. Our clients' interests always come first. Integrity and honesty are at the heart of our business. We are dedicated to complying fully with the law, yada, yada, yada. In 2010, the SEC engaged in enforcement actions and investigations against Goldman over collateralized debt obligations it sold in 2006 and 2007 in the run-up to the financial crisis. These investigations were over alleged conflicts of interest and whether Goldman was selling CDOs, collateralized debt obligations that it knew would decline in value. These never resulted in criminal charges, but in response to the news, the stock price declined. As columnist Matt Levine states, and I absolutely recommend his daily column if you're at all interested in securities law and just the hedge fund and finance world in general, everything is securities fraud. You do something wrong and your stock price drops. You can say it was securities fraud for not giving sufficient warning that something was going to go wrong. And sure enough, here plaintiffs sued, alleging that the generic statements Goldman made about its ethics were misleading and caused loss when they were corrected by revelations of the investigations. And to be fair to plaintiffs' claims, they presented expert evidence that because Goldman was involved in such complicated transactions with many parties on many sides, its statements about its conflict of interest policies were allegedly important to the marketplace. Goldman argued that these generic statements were immaterial as a matter of law. The district court disagreed and denied a motion to dismiss. So, law of the case, the statements are potentially material. At the class certification stage, Goldman tried to rebut the basic fraud on the market presumption. It argued that the general aspirational statements alleged as misstatements could not have affected the stock price, and it contended that the nature of the statements was relevant evidence in assessing price impact despite any overlap with the considerations relevant to the merits issue of materiality. Goldman noted that there were dozens of public and press reports about alleged conflicts of interest that did not cause its stock to decline. There are hundreds of analyst reports about Goldman, and none of them singled out their aspirational statements in analyzing the stock, so on and so forth. Nevertheless, the district court certified the class, refusing to consider Goldman's evidence because it putting the statements in a box said these statements go to materiality and not price impact, and therefore the presumption was not rebutted. The first time around, the Second Circuit reversed, correctly noting that the district court had failed to apply the preponderance of evidence standard in determining whether the presumption of basic had been rebutted, and should have considered the evidence of a price impact, even though it touched on materiality. It differs from materiality in a crucial respect because it refers to the effect of a misrepresentation on the stock price. But the Second Circuit rejected Goldman's argument that Federal Rule of Evidence 301 applied. Goldman argued that it only had the burden of production to rebut the presumption, not the burden of persuasion. The court left the burden of persuasion on Goldman. So on remand, Goldman again presented evidence, multiple expert reports. Plaintiffs responded with a single expert. In my view, this expert sort of cherry picking. The expert admitted he didn't consider alternative hypotheses, but with that narrow scope of his analysis, concluded there was price impact through inflation maintenance of price. Inflation maintenance is the theory that on the notion that even though a statement when made may not have had an impact on the stock price, it somehow maintains the price at an inflated level. But even under that theory, the expert didn't have any explanation when the original inflation occurred. The district court again certified the class, determining that Goldman had failed to rebut the basic presumption by a preponderance of the evidence. Goldman argued that these statements were too generic, that they could not have impacted the stock price. The court disagreed. So Goldman appeals again to the Second Circuit, and a different panel of the Second Circuit affirms in a 2-1 decision. Notwithstanding the first panel's decision in Halliburton 2, the court characterized Goldman's argument as, quote, an attempt to smuggle materiality into Rule 23. According to the court, whether misstatements are too general to demonstrate price impact has nothing to do with whether with the issue of whether common questions predominate, because the issue of materiality is common to all class members. The court concluded that defendants could still challenge materiality in moving to dismiss or for summary judgment. Having refused to consider the generic nature of the alleged misstatements, the Court of Appeals proceeded to determine that Goldman had failed to rebut the basic presumption by a preponderance of evidence, characterizing Goldman's burden as, quote, a heavy one, explaining that Goldman could rebut the basic presumption only by showing that the entire price decline on the corrective disclosure dates was due to something other than their alleged misstatements. The court repeatedly stressed that Goldman bore the burden of persuasion. The dissent, and as well as Goldman in the cert petition, complained that the majority's approach basically makes basic irrebuttable. And indeed, in the years since Halliburton, defendants have only rebutted the basic presumption 5 times. So Goldman successfully seeks certiorari on 2 questions. First, whether the defendant in the securities class action may rebut the presumption of class-wide reliance that BASIC recognized by pointing to the generic nature of the alleged misstatements and showing that the statements had no impact on the price of the security, even though that evidence is also relevant to the substantive elements of materiality. And then second, the Federal Rule of Evidence 301 question, does a defendant seeking to rebut the basic presumption have only a burden of production or also the ultimate burden of persuasion? So the issues joined, but at the merits briefing stage, the division shrunk considerably. Goldman had argued that generality had demonstrated legal immateriality and thus lack of price impact. At the merits stage, they argue instead that the statement's generality can support other evidence of a lack of price impact, and that it just goes to the likelihood of price impact, and that judges can make that determination as a matter of common sense. Respondents argued that expert evidence matters more than common sense and makes the disputed contention that Goldman had abandoned this argument on appeal, whereas plaintiffs argued below that courts couldn't consider the evidence at all. They concede that courts should consider the nature of a statement in determining price impact. On the Rule 301 issue, Goldman relies on the language of Rule 301 and argues that the court's creation of a presumption basis does not rise to a rule of statute overriding that rule. Respondents disagree, complaining that defendants will always be able to meet the burden of production and that Goldman's interpretation of Rule 301 will undo the basic presumption and the holding of Halliburton too. Respondents also argue that Rule 301 does not apply to class certification decisions, a question that wasn't really addressed in the reply brief or at oral argument. The plaintiffs argue that the basic rule is a proxy rather than a presumption. Goldman responds by saying that basic itself cited Rule 301 and that the court repeatedly calls it a presumption. So this is an important case. As I noted, rebuttal of the basic presumption has only happened 5 times. And Goldman put it at oral argument, if certification is permitted here, the promise of Halliburton II will have been betrayed, quote unquote, and any stock drop will inevitably result in a reverse engineered securities class action based on generic statements that everyone makes, the Matt Levine, everything is securities fraud parable. So though this was potentially important, oral argument suggested that we might be getting a very narrow decision. As the Chief and Justice Barrett noted, there isn't much daylight between the parties on the first question. Goldman conceded an argument that plaintiff's inflation maintenance theory is conceivably valid in some circumstances. Goldman argues that materiality focuses on what a hypothetical reasonable investor would care about, while price impact focuses on what actually happened, and that disproof of price impact touches on materiality shouldn't preclude its evaluation, but the plaintiffs don't disagree with that either.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.